Welcome back to PS Editors Podcast. I'm Greg Bruno. Unless you're a farmer, you probably haven't thought much about the earth beneath your feet. But perhaps you should. Its top layer sustains us, and the links between soil quality, crop productivity, and poverty are staggering. For many smallholder farmers around the world, soil quality can be the difference between economic security and a life of poverty and perpetual hunger. For the rest of us, soil is simply a forgotten necessity. As the UN Food and Agriculture Organization noted in its 2015 Status of the World Soil Resources report, soils are fundamental to life on Earth, but with the ranks of farmers shrinking, fewer people than ever can comprehend that. Our guest today understands it better than most. Esther Gumby is an entomologist and soil researcher at the University of Illinois and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. And she's long argued that if the world's human development goals are ever to be met, improving soil quality must be part of the solution. Hi, is this Esther?
Yes.
Hi, this is Greg. Thanks for joining us today at PS Editors Podcast.
Thank you for having me today.
Now, I've reached you in your lab, I believe. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're sitting and what kinds of instruments and research equipment are you surrounded by?
Thank you very much. So I'm surrounded by a hood where we do a lot of the checking the microbes that we are working with and transferring them into beakers and making solutions that then we use. We walk with them to the greenhouses where we work with the plants. And I'm surrounded by incubators, because microbes, for them to grow, they have to grow at a set temperature, and that's where we keep them. So we have different beneficial microbe strains that we use, and all these strains have different unique properties that in turn help the plants do a lot of amazing work. And then, quite a busy lab.
It sounds like a very busy place, and I understand that microbes have a lot to say, so perhaps we should start asking them what they have to tell us.
Exactly.
Let's get right to it. You study tiny things, but I want to start with the big picture, if we could. The United Nations estimates that by 2050, some 10 billion people will inhabit the Earth. And with declining supplies of fresh water, issues regarding feeding all those people will magnify and intensify. Now, given that agriculture accounts for about 70% of all fresh water, as you've written, it's clear that farming will need to adapt and become a bit more water efficient. So you've spent years studying one way to do that. Tell us a bit about your work and why, in your view, soil health is so critical for the future of humanity.
Thank you very much. First of all, yes, we must acknowledge that our population is growing and it will continue to grow. So estimated, according to UN, by 2050 will be 9 billion of us. And you said it very well that we must still be able to feed the 9 billion people. And agriculture must continue to adapt. But the problem is, agriculture, the success of agriculture depends on soil, because that's the foundation with which most of the crops that are eaten or will be eaten by mankind grow. The problem is 65% of the soil in Africa and the African continent is degraded. It's not healthy, and it won't be able to sustain the crop growth and the agriculture that we need to be able to feed the expanding population. Knowing that the soil is degraded and healthy, my research has been working on understanding what are some of the natural solutions that we can tap on. And that's when I realized that actually some of those solutions actually live in the soil. They are embedded in the soil, and that's where we have the tiny microbes. So once again, the bigger picture is that We are growing, our population is growing, but the foundation with which we will need to feed this growing population cannot sustain.
So what's happening to Africa's soils? I mean, you said just now, and you've noted this fact in some of your PS commentaries, that 65% of Africa's soils are quote-unquote sick. What does a sick soil look like specifically, and why is it such a problem for farmers in Africa in particular?
So sick soil is a soil that clearly cannot grow healthy crops. And I believe you've seen pictures of some of the crops that are grown by smallholder farmers. If you ever put a side and to side of a corn, say maize growing in a soil here in Urbana, Illinois, for example, compared to maize that's growing in my community, very different picture. It's like night and day. And the problem, why is the soil in Kenya, for example, and many other countries in Africa sick, is because for millions and many thousands of years, we've continued to just grow crops and misuse the soil without returning back to the soil. We consider soil as this non-depleting resource that is capable of just handling all the pressures of crop growth. However, it is not. So, for example, farmers in Africa keep on growing year after year, season after season, the same crops, and they do not rotate these crops, or they do not even do simple things like mulching to ensure that we return back some of the nutrients that the plants are taking away from the soil. So these are some of the reasons as to why soils and many soils in the African continent are degraded.
Right. Okay. And so it's that feeds into declining economic health and weaker food security. So this idea of a soil poverty cycle is deeply connected.
Correct. That's very true. And as I said, you know, when you don't take care of your soil year and after year, you're losing, you know, you cannot sustain crop production anymore. You cannot, your yields are not increasing. Even though we live in years where there's a lot of innovation happening around improved seed varieties, improved drought-tolerant crop varieties, fertilizers. But the problem is that without healthy soils, you still cannot enjoy these benefits that are coming from science innovation. So once again, unhealthy soils, no matter how many improved varieties, improved fertilizers that you use, you're not going to harness all these benefits.
So, you know, there's dual tracks here. There's improving agricultural practices to ensure that growers and smallholder farmers are using the best means available in the industry to maintain soil health. But you've also done a lot of work on whether or not microbes or certain bacteria in soil can kind of come to the rescue. Talk to us about your research. And specifically, how does it work? I mean, the idea that beneficial bacteria can help plants grow bigger with better yields, even in drought conditions. What's the science behind that?
So that's a very good question. So once again, as I say that, yeah, you know, for many years, we've ignored these microbes, these beneficial soil bacteria. And why I love them and why my research is so focused and heavily on them, because first of all, they are present in the soil, so they are not, and they've lived with the plants for billions of years, aiding plants to survive over the years, whether it's drought and any other extremities that come along with the changing climate. But we never paid attention to them until just recently. These researchers started, you know, to gain importance. Or, well, I would say just almost 5 years ago, and so these tiny microbes, how do they work? They sense when the plants are having stress, the plants will exude some chemicals, and then the bacteria also sense it, and they come and they uniformly work together. So they are they form mutualism. So that means they are working together, beneficial associations, where the plant is benefiting because once they start working together, they start changing the chemistry of the plants. They start they induce so many other changes in the plants that eventually work to enable the plant to make the most out of the nutrients. For example, they make the plant's roots grow bigger. And when the plant roots grow bigger, it means that if there is not enough water, then the roots can be able to extend deeper down the soil to be able to access water levels. This eventually benefits the crop because then it will be able to grow and it will be able to withstand the absence of water. Secondly, we've also found that actually once the plants and the microbes talk, then the chemistry changes, the fragrance of the plant changes. And in the plant world, fragrance and chemicals are very important because they mediate the interactions between the insect herbivores that come to hit the plants. They mediate interactions between the natural enemies of this insect pest. And so what we found out is that once a plant and the microbes have this amazing relationship together, the plant ends up becoming a decoy system, in that it starts producing this fragrance that's saying, hey, don't come and eat me because everybody is trying to eat me. However, nobody is eating that plant. Actually, the plant is very healthy. So it in turn becomes a decoy system.
So it's interesting. As you're speaking, I don't know if this is an apt analogy, but I'm thinking of like a speed dating round. And you as scientists are bringing microbes and plants together to communicate.
Correct.
Perhaps maybe a better analogy would be marriage counseling. from a scientific perspective, how do you encourage this, and how do farmers change their practices? Is this about adding soil or doing things differently, or is that still something that's kind of contained to the lab?
So let's say you just go to a field, you find some spots where the plants are growing like very well, and then you find spots where the plants are not doing well. So we first go to these plots where the plants are growing well, because obviously something is different. And that's where we find the community of microbes. So we it's just naturally happening. So we pick the soils and the plants and we bring them to the lab and identify who are these members of this community, who are these unique beneficial soil microbes. And once we identify them, then we also find out what are they doing. Are there any other benefits that we did not see from the field that we can see in the lab? And then once we see it, then now we work towards amplifying those benefits, and then we return them back to the soil and back to the farmers, where they can now reuse those products to help them get more benefits. Then the other thing is, so as I said, these are natural, so we're not doing any genetic engineering or anything. We're just amplifying the benefits that are already happening in the nature.
Okay. I mean, so that's an interesting field observation. I wonder, though, if there are any ethical issues to what we're talking about here. If it's encouraging what's actually already happening, perhaps the answer is no. But I wonder how consumers in some places will respond to products and food grown in quote-unquote enhanced ways. I mean, will crops grown under these sorts of beneficial microbial conditions ever need any sort of GMO-type regulation?
No. And clearly, like here in the U.S., they don't go through the standard screening that goes through with any other genetically modified crops or anything. These are natural, so FDA here in the U.S. doesn't require them to go through this very extraneous and, you know, screenings and everything to make sure that nothing is happening. As I said, we're not changing anything. We're just amplifying that what is natural.
I think a good way to end is bringing it back to where we started and talking about some of the challenges that have befallen farmers in Africa and specifically. You know, we talk a lot about bad agricultural practices, and a lot of fingers get pointed at growers specifically. But this isn't just the fault of farmers. I mean, governments play a role too in terms of setting policies and subsidizing monocropping and supporting agribusinesses rather than small organic farms. From that as context, what can be done to persuade governments to devote more attention to soil health and better crop management? And are some countries doing it better than others?
That's always a complicated question, because we have the big farming businesses, and then we have the smallholder farmers, and it always feels like there's a clash, because the arguments are still clear, because they say, oh yeah, smallholder farmers will never be able to feed the population that is arising, and the need, you know, we can never satisfy production just by relying on smallholder farmers, so we need the big farmers. So I think it's just striking a balance and ensuring that the governments, you know, understand that irrespective of who they support, we still, the basic is soil health is important, and beneficial soil microbes play a role in that. They help us make sure that the health of the soil is there. And no matter whether you're a big business farmer, because at the end of the day, once again, I did not probably discuss that you may have the ability to buy the pesticides, but these microbes actually help your plants to be able to also take in the fertilizers that you're using. So there is a benefits on both sides. And governments must set policies that ensure that everybody, every farmer, big or small, is taking care of the soil, is making sure they're returning back to the soils. They're using some of the practices that also return to the soil, you know, crop rotation, mulching, making sure we're not just monocropping. And because when there's monocropping, we lack the diversity, and we start sub-selecting these microbes, and eventually they lose that ability to continue working with the crop. So at the end of the day, I think the governments have to support and implement policies that ensure that everybody is taking care of soil, and that they're also providing subsidies and incentives for everyone to protect soils, because there are risks that come if we do not do that. You know, the climate is changing, and ever more continuously we'll continue to rely on our, this ally, I always call them our allies that are there, and they've been there for years, and so governments have a role, and they must play that role.
Our invisible allies. Now, are any examples or models or initiatives worthy of pointing out, whether it's the World Bank's initiative to restore 500 million hectares of farmland, or the Global Soil Partnership recently launched by the FAO? Yes. Are some of these programs inspiring and giving you hope that governments in Africa and around the world recognize the importance of soil health?
Definitely. And as I said, it all began with the goodwill of 2015, when the United Nations made 2015 the year of the soil. I think this truly said to everyone that, hey, soil is important. We must protect it. And then, yes, you already mentioned the Global Soil Health Partnership. And I think every day I read very good initiatives coming out from the ground, which is a clear indication that, yeah, people are realizing that we must continue protecting the soil. The World Bank is doing also a good job ensuring that they are asking countries to take steps. They're also rewarding, and they're putting out incentives for farmers that actually practice these practices. I like to say in North America, clearly USDA, clearly there's a soil health partnership that are truly standing up and saying, yes, we must do this. And there are also incentives to the farmers, to the growers who are actively doing what is right. And I know in one of my writings, I pointed out that in South Africa, there's a project that's ongoing where they are mapping the diversity of African microbes, which I think it's important. I personally look for the day where Africa clearly maps and is able to identify the diversity of the unique beneficial soil microbes that are present. First of all, it's their wealth. I think there's a lot of wealth, and that these microbes are stored as germplasm and they are stored for use in the future. I would be happy to see that, where we sequence all our soils and know who is there. And the ones that are beneficial, they are protected, they are stored, and to be used. And then we patent these products. Then these startups will start to. So there's a lot of wealth that can come up from just looking into the soil.
Interesting. Yeah. So kind of like a micro bank as opposed to a seed bank.
Yes. And we need that. It's important that I think we need to lobby for that and ensure that that happens. And because, we are realizing that microbes, even in the animal world, they're important. They're playing all these important roles. So we must know who they are and protect them and store them in the future.
Yeah, these invisible helpers, as you put it, I think that's
a nice
way to wrap up and leave the conversation.
Thank you very much for making me talk about my friends. As I say, my invisible alias that we don't ever recognize.
Well, I will start saying hi to them every step I take.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time today.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
That was Esther Gumby, an entomologist and soils researcher at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. And that's all for this episode. Thanks for listening. Be sure to rate and review our podcast and subscribe on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes. And if you like what you hear, why not subscribe to our newest editorial offering, On Point, available at www.project-syndicate.org. Until next time, I'm Greg Bruno.